Mr. Speaker.
You're at the intersection of business and politics. This is the 14th and G podcast from Melman Consulting. Now, here's our host, Dean Hinkson.
Thank you for setting your podcast out of 14th and G. I am your host, Dean Hinkson, here in the thick of it in the first full week of March because it is Super Tuesday and we're all feeling super with primary elections from American Samoa to the Commonwealth of Virginia. President Biden will deliver his second State of the Union address on Thursday this week, widely seen as crucial for a president in a reelect who would end his second term much closer to 90 than to 80. And we've got lots going on the Hill, two appropriations tracks going as Congress tries to wrap up fiscal year 24 and simultaneously get going on fiscal year 25. And I, personally, am still processing the end of the Mitch McConnell era for Senate Republicans with a leadership race changing by the day, but it's not going to take place for another 8 months. So I'm super glad to have my good friends here at the firm, Republican Bruce Melman and Democrat David Thomas, joining me here on 14th and G in the worldwide studios to break it all down. Bruce, DT, welcome to 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean.
DT, does Dean sound angry to you now that he's got dry March going? Because that sounded more angry than enthusiastic to me.
I know. He's excited. It's springtime. We've got a lot to talk about.
All right.
Let's dive right in.
I've got my two-day chip, Bruce. I've been sober for 2 days, and I'm not happy about it. A lot going on in races across the country. Nominees are going to be selected. I know we've got the top of the ticket is not going to be much of a surprise. President Biden is certainly going to be the nominee, I think, for the Democrats. After today, I don't know if Trump will be the mathematically presumptive nominee for the Republicans any more presumptive than he already is.
In a nation of 340 million people, we got those two guys.
Hey, they live to March.
I think it's incredible that the nominating season is done. But yes, Bruce, we've known this is coming for a while, and now it's here. So we have our nominees. This is going to be a very long, drawn-out general election season. I suppose if I'm trying to look at the positive side of this, at least we don't have to stay up late tonight to see how the results turn out. We pretty much know where we are.
And these are, Bruce, I think you tweeted this just earlier. Most of these states are winner-take-all on the delegate count.
Yeah, I think all but 13 of them are on the Republican side. The Democrats believe that if you get 60% of the vote, you ought to get 60% of the delegates, but they also believe you're not allowed to run against their presumptive nominee and preferred sitting president. The Republicans, anybody can run, but whoever gets the most votes gets all the delegates, so God bless America.
But DT, President Biden just cannot get beyond this chatter of is he actually going to be the nominee? New York Times, Siena poll out, I think, end of last week or early this week. But those were some disastrous numbers for President Biden, both in terms of 2020 Biden voters that are committed to voting for him in 2024. And some of the breakouts on African-American vote, on Hispanic vote, though his numbers are not looking good.
To answer your first question, Dean, I don't know how many times I have to say this. He is running. He will be the Democrats' nominee. As much as you and Bruce and others would like to gin up controversy here, he's our guy. Look, I think if the general election were today, sure, there would be some jittery nerves just two blocks over from us at the White House. But it is not general election day. It is Super Tuesday, which means we have, about 8 months to go until that election.
Almost
so
exactly.
The president is going to make a case on why he deserves another to have his contract renewed here for another 4 years here. And boy, he's got a great case to make against the other guy who'd like to have another 4 years in the office here. So I'll take my guy over your guy any day of the week.
Nikki Haley hanging in there, Bruce. She won the District of Columbia primary. So she's going to come to the convention to Milwaukee with some delegates in her pocket.
Look, the D.C. primary is known as the slingshot primary by no one anywhere whatsoever. look, it'd be nice if it were a contest. It'd be nice if the party of Reagan had anybody Reagan-esque in the conversation. They don't. Donald Trump is the nominee. The base has made it crystal clear, particularly given that those states are proportional. You're right. If it's not mathematically done today, it's mathematically done next week or the week after. Trump's the nominee for the GOP for the third election in a row.
Having voted in a Republican primary in the District of Columbia, it's always fun when you walk in and we got another one, Mabel, and they bring a shrink wrap stack of ballots and blow the dust off. And here you are, sir. Good luck to you. Well, a big part of President Biden making that case for reelect is going to happen on Thursday when he delivers his State of the Union to a joint session of Congress. You know, I guess this could go a lot of ways. He could go long to sort of reinforce his stamina, his vigor. or, you know, he could try to cut this short and make it a boom, 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 try to get some points to really stick with people. What do you think the president's going to do?
Well, you know, on the State of the Union, I think it is one of the great traditions really left here in town. I love everything about it. I love the way that the Senate and the Cabinet and the Supreme Court are called into the chamber. I love the pageantry of it all. What I don't love is generally the speech, which they're generally there's not a lot of poetry in these speeches. They're generally long lists of mashed together either accomplishments or things you'd still like to get done without a lot of magic in there. So I was actually talking with a friend of mine who was a White House speechwriter the other day about it. Rather than do, which he did, how long did President Biden talk last year? It's like 70 minutes. Yeah. I mean, it's a long time.
Yeah. Well over an hour.
But it's hard to remember. What did he say? It's hard to remember what it was. If I were writing the speech, I would encourage him to let's not go for the length here. Let's go for the quality. It is a, you know, we're at a difficult time right now in our country here, and we're about to have a very stark contrast on the way our country can go. And if I were the president, I would try to keep in mind other speeches that were given in that body. That maybe put everything into perspective. He'll be standing where FDR spoke to the United States and the world after the Pearl Harbor attacks, famously the date that will live in infamy. I would call upon that because we are faced at a similar time in Europe and around the world, reminding people of the essential role that Americans have to play to protect our democracy and our world. I would remind people of that we can still do great things and we can do them together. That's a message I'd like to hear. I think that's a message that would resonate with most of the country, and I think it'd be a refreshing change.
I don't know about you, Bruce, but I'm leaving here and going straight to my nearest recruiting office and joining up.
We've got a big tent, D. We're ready for you.
You got me going, DT.
We need you on that wall.
Bruce, we don't need your vote in Bethesda. We've got that covered.
Yes, there is a Republican in Bethesda. It's us.
Well, not every response to the State of the Union. I think Governor Bobby Jindal probably still takes the cake for worst State of the Union response in modern history. It's never good. You go from the pageantry of the chamber to, you know, a staircase, a desk, a podium. I'm not sure.
No audience. Going to be hard to get a drink of water. You got to unscrew the cap. That's always a trap for the unwary.
But a great contrast, reminding us that there are in fact members of the United States Senate younger than any of us.
I don't like that reminder whatsoever.
How do you think? Is there anything Senator Britt can do to draw that contrast to, quote unquote, help the cause?
Well, look, she's a young woman. He's an older gentleman. So the contrast is there. It's if you had to bet your life, he's going to have a long laundry list of stuff he claims he did and stuff he claims he's going to do. So my advice to her would be keep it short, keep it sweet, to try to be positive, to talk about the ways in which the Republican majority would want to be the Republican wannabe majority in the Senate wants to address some of these challenges that haven't been addressed. But look, it's one of the toughest calls in politics to get that, because you're all excited, and Lucy always moves the damn football. Everybody ends up on their back.
Yeah, that's my advice for Senator Britt, is don't do it. Find somebody else to do it, or call in sick that day. It never works out well. It's a horrible thing to have to do. She should take a pass.
There's a first time for everything. A first time for everything. And then Senator Britt, I've met her many times, and she has worked with her on the Hill when I was in the Senate myself. And she is terrific. So if anybody can pull it off, I think she can. Well, Congress is doing other things. In fact, the two tracks I mentioned, first and foremost, maybe we'll do a little Hill outlook here, because Congress is trying mightily to wrap up FY24 appropriations and simultaneously start FY25 appropriations as we move right on through the first quarter of 2024. They've now split this into two tranches of bills. It sounds like it's going to be six and six. Six bills on March 8th and six bills on March 22nd. The negotiators, at least, are pretty optimistic this is going to get done. Speaker Johnson, for his part, has talked the talk and walked the walk of not allowing shutdown to rule the day, to put these things on the floor and get the continuing resolutions needed to process these. But how does it look from your end?
I think it looks pretty good. I think it'll be on go through the floor tomorrow under suspension, because while it may have the votes on the floor, they don't have the votes in the Rules Committee to get it out of the House. So it's going to take a big bipartisan vote to get it done in the House, but I think it's there, and I do think that we're finally making some progress forward to getting these bills done. So I do think we'll have the six done hopefully by the weekend here. And then Congress can turn to the other six appropriations bills, which are a little harder to get done, but 2 weeks is an eternity up there. So I think they can get that done too.
Yeah, you've got Homeland Security and Defense in the second tranche, which Homeland in particular with border and immigration is going to be a tough one to
sort
out.
That's right. Hopefully we can bring this, last fiscal year to an end. Should have been on September 30th. It may be on March 22nd, but who's counting?
Then there's a big bipartisan tax bill that got 350 some odd votes in the House sitting in the Senate. 357. There's a big bipartisan foreign supplemental bill that came out of the Senate that's sitting in the House. With 70 votes out of the Senate. That's the money for Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, et cetera. Haven't heard or seen much movement on either of those, and maybe that waits for appropriations, but got a lot of, particularly on the tax bill that is awaiting Senate action. I know we got a lot of clients that care about R&D tax credit and other things that are in that bill. Any movement?
Well, so look, there are two things. There's the prognosis, which DT, I'm going to flip to you on in a second for in terms of your odds making. I always get the guesses wrong. But what does it say about the state of Congress that you can have 357 members vote for a bill in the House? That's serious bipartisanship. And yet it may or may not get floor time in the Senate. And you can have 70 members of the Senate, crazy, more than the infrastructure bill, which had 69. And yet that may or may not see the light of day in the House. You know, as we think about what ails the country, what ails our political system, we've talked about and we'll keep talking about things like maybe there are smarter ways to run primaries, or maybe there are ways to bring the political rules and system into the internet era, because we have rules that made sense in the middle of the 20th century and it's creating a lot of waves in the 21st. But among the reforms people ought to think about is there ought to be a way such that something with such overwhelming bipartisan support in either chamber gets an up or down vote in the other chamber. And yet it's not obvious that they will. I do think if you put the tax bill with 357 out of the House on the floor of the Senate, it would pass easily. And I do think if you took the border security or the national security supplemental and you put it on the floor of the House, it would pass easily.
And I think there's a shot to get them both done this year. I think part of the challenge here is that this focus on appropriations and government shutdowns and last minute deadlines has made it difficult to tackle these other bills here. If in March we can finally settle on government funding for the rest of the year, I think that frees up a little bit more time. I think the tax bill is going to go at some point. It may not go by April 15th, tax day, but I think still think that's a possibility. And boy, I agree with you, Bruce, on your point about the foreign aid supplementals. There is a wide bipartisan support to get that done. So I remain optimistic that both of those bills can get done as soon as we can get some of these others more pressing things out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, time is of the essence. We're in, you know, we're in a 3-week work period here. We're in the first week. We've got 2 more weeks to go. Congress has gone for a 2-week recess around the Easter spring break. And then, you know, like you said, you're past tax day at this point. It seems like March is pretty critical to at least get that teed up process-wise. Bruce, you might get your wish on just thinking about what you said. There ought to be some way to get these things considered up or down. You know, talking about the end of the Mitch McConnell era in the United States Senate, everything that means for Republicans, everything that means for Democrats, many of whom are probably not too sorry to see him go. But Mitch McConnell is one of a dying breed of real Senate institutionalists, and you know whoever takes his place, either on the Republican side or the Democratic side as majority leader, depending on who's in the White House. But you know the legislative filibuster, which requires 60 votes for pretty much anything of consequence in the United States Senate, requires bipartisan cooperation, requires bipartisan deal-making in the Senate to get anything passed. I think that hangs by a thread with every election. And particularly if President Trump is reelected, I think that's near the top of his priority list is if there's a Republican Senate majority, getting the legislative filibuster stripped out so his agenda can be passed by simple majority.
Agree 100%. That will be very high on his hit list. And then instead of reconciliation being that one bill, we suddenly find Katie bar the door if the Republicans also have picked up the House. DT is high confidence. I am less certain the House is going to flip, but it's a very distinct possibility.
Yeah, no, the House is definitely going to flip. So we can spend all the time we want talking about who the new Senate leader is, but the top guy in the Capitol building is going to be Hakeem Jeffries, who will be Speaker of the House. I'm certain about that. Take it to the bank. It's going to happen.
Note to editor, please flag this audio for future use.
Yes, please do, so I can finally convince these two knuckleheads that I'm getting something right. I also agree with you on the your prediction on the Senate here. I think that the rules will change in the next Congress if Republicans are in charge and if President Trump is in the White House, and it'll basically be like we'll have two House of Representatives, which is too bad because the Senate is supposed to be the saucer that cools the milk in the teacup or something like that. Dean, you'll correct me there.
Yes.
but I think we're going to have two steaming hot cups of tea.
Boiling over.
Who pulled the thread on the filibuster? Remind me.
That would be Senator Harry Reid when he was majority leader. Senator Reid began the beginning of the end of the filibuster on nominations, and he did it for executive branch nominations that bled into judicial nominations and then Supreme Court nominations. So really, the legislative filibuster is the only vestige of the filibuster left. All the nominees.
Why was Senator Reid forced to do that? Does anybody recall?
All the nominees were being blocked.
All the nominees were being blocked because there were certain Republican senators who believed that President Obama should not be able to have people to support him. He should have just done the whole job himself. Look, it's a shame. I think there's nothing more boring than listening to old senators rehash how this process got screwed up going back to Robert Bork. But if you want to go down that road,
who was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee when Bork was there, by the way?
Who was that, Bruce? Who was that?
I believe that was middle-aged Joe Biden.
Did Bork get a vote? He did. Robert Bork got a vote.
Well, it's
Merrick easy. Garland did not get a vote. How long was that seat held open?
A year.
Over a year.
Yes.
A Supreme. And then, miraculously, you can push through another Senate nominee One, voting had already started in October and going forward.
What was the rule that was changed?
What was the rule that he changed?
Yes.
He held one seat open for a year.
What's the rule?
The rule is he decided, I don't have to give a hearing to anybody. I will neither advise nor consent. I will do nothing and sit on my hands.
I agree with you. He dispensed with what you and I would have considered practice. Of course, as there always is, there was a Joe Biden quote saying you shouldn't do it too close to an election. I think a year and change doesn't feel too close.
That was actually the Thurmond rule. It was too close to the election. So if you want to bring him into it, I'm happy to spend the rest of this podcast talking about the merits of Strom Thurmond.
It wasn't a rule. If I want to hear about the merits of Strom Thurmond, I'll just go to the eulogy delivered by Senator Joe Biden.
I'll see if I can get Miguel Estrada on the podcast next time to talk about qualified judicial nominees that don't.
They can filibusters.
In the meantime, we do have a pretty the Senate Republican leadership election has taken on some clarity. The three Johns, Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming, who's currently got the number three spot as conference chair, has elected to forego the leader's race, and he will run for the whip spot. Hopefully he's unopposed in that because he's a really good one. Senator John Cornyn and Senator John Thune are the two vying for the top spot. Senator Thune, look, he's currently in leadership. He has the number two spot as whip. He's filled in as sort of a deputy leader over the last 6 months or so as Senator McConnell has faced some challenges. It seems like he is, just by dint of being the more current guy, it just seems like he's probably got a bit of an inside track here. Senator Cornyn has been out of leadership for a while, but he's got a lot of chits in the Senate. He's spent two terms as NRSC chair, and he's got a lot of chits and relationships to rely on. And, you know, just for the benefit of everyone, this will be nothing like the speaker's election. For one thing, it takes place behind closed doors. And it's just about 51 or 52 guys that are gonna hold this election.
And it's secret ballot, right?
Yeah, I believe it is secret ballot, Bruce. I believe it is. It's one of those where your whip count can easily exceed your electoral count.
As you and I know, look, both Senator Thune and Senator Cornyn are terrific senators. They're very capable men. They've been constructive lieutenants to Leader McConnell and constructive forces in the United States Senate. I don't know which one of those guys will necessarily win. I would say the jump ball. They're both pretty tall. My money would go to Thune, who was, I think, both more athletic and a former basketball player. But to me, the question is, who's the president? Because if Donald Trump is back in the or on his way back to the White House, I suspect he will not respect separate chamber and say they should choose their own leader, but rather he'll pick a favorite. And without knowing for certain, I don't know that his favorite is either of those two senators.
The other important thing to remember is that the leader will be elected by the 119th Congress,
right?
The next Congress of senators post-election. So, Bruce, DT, thank you for joining me on 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean.
Thanks, Dean.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast, brought to you by the lobbying firm of Melman Consulting. For more, just type 14th and G podcast into your favorite search engine or look for 14th and G wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.